Well, the able person keeping us on the air this hour is none other than Steve Carr, and it's Steve's birthday. So, Stephen, on behalf of everyone at Coast to Coast, thank you for what you do for us. Richard C. Hoagland is going to stick around. Eric is with us. We're going to take your phone calls. Eric's topics and subject matter, of course, you have heard, so get ready. And Richard C.'s with us as well. So we'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie, Eric Hutschmidt, our guest, along with Richard C. Hoagland. Both of you will be sharing a phone line. Eric, the subject, of course, of JFK, Apollo, 9/11. And I think the major thing that you're trying to imply here is that there's a bigger picture here of an organization, of a group, of some people who are trying to control the destiny of so many other people, and they just will not stop. Am I pretty correct at that assumption?
Yeah, I would agree with that one. That's what I would say. They're all kind of linked together. There's some. It's not President Bush. It's not President Clinton. It's something else. Something.
You know, there's also talk that this same group wants to get the population of this planet down from 6 billion down to 500 million. And you know what? That could be possible, too.
Well, yeah, except that's again where they see the, if you look at what they've been doing so far, they've been failing time after time. They may fail at that and just make things even more miserable. Because, I mean, so far, what did they accomplish with any of these things they've done so far? You know, this is the thing that's most, I think, is most scary. It's not that they're trying to do these things. It's that I think they're trying and they're failing. And in the meantime, we're all suffering, including them. And they may be trying now to do a to reduce the population, but are they going to? They may not. What they may do is reduce America's population in Europe, and meanwhile, the other populations around the world just fill in the gap, and they may end up wiping out not only us, but themselves. You see, this is the potential problem you have here. If you look at the reproduction rates in those other nations, they can fill up our nation in a matter of years. When they're having 12 to 18 babies per woman, they may reduce only our population. They may just cause total chaos in Europe and America and just wipe us out. So this is what I think we have to start thinking of. These people may not be this evil genius that people are trying to create them into. You know, they're not like that James Bond movie where these are brilliant people. They may be lunatics. Some of these people may be totally nuts.
Well, they've got to be nuts to do what they want to do, but they've got to be also geniuses at how they try to do it.
Well, in some cases, yeah, some of them are. Some of them have to be. If you look at that World Trade Center demolition, that thing was incredible. And the plane, the way it hit that building and blew into that beautiful, well, I mean, if you want to call it beautiful, that incredible Hollywood-style fireball. I mean, it was precision. And the way that brought those towers down so perfectly in the Building 7, I mean, it was definitely, there are some intelligent people in there, but who is in there at the top? Who
George,
is,
can I ask a question of Eric?
Yeah.
Eric, do you deal in your book with the Pentagon?
Yes.
And what is your explanation for the missing aircraft?
I don't think Flight 77 hit that building. It looks more like some drone, like a Global Hawk or something.
All right, but where did it go? Because those people on that plane died.
This is a big mystery. I mean, where did it go is the mystery. And you see, if you look at the Northwoods document, and also this is also an interesting comparison between this and the World Trade Center. The Northwoods document shows that in the 1960s, the Pentagon was considering this policy, this plan where they might have a plane take off with basically their own people in it. It would secretly land, the people get off, and they send up an unmanned drone, and they shoot that down and pretend all the people are dead. Now, Flight 77, for all we know, followed that plan where the people may have landed somewhere. They may not be dead. They may be just names. They may not be real people. They may have just gotten off and went back home with fake names. We don't even know if those people are really dead. And so it could be the Pentagon attack is almost superficial. It reminds me of the Northwoods document where.
Well, I got to differ with you on that. I think those people on that plane, they're dead. Where that plane ended up, I don't know, but I think those people are dead.
Okay, well, even if they are dead, it's still a very, compared to the World Trade Center, it's almost superficial.
Eric, except for the ballistics of the tower collapse, what I've heard tonight is a lot of theory, but no real evidence.
Evidence of what?
evidence of this conspiracy.
The conspiracy is proven when you say the towers were blown up. I mean, who did that? That's not one person.
No. You can't say that. You've got to back it up with something. I mean, however you, Richard, or I may feel about this, you know, for any of us to say we think this happened, you got to back it up with something. And that's the unfortunate part of all this as well. We've got supposition. Yes, the planes weren't called. The military jets could have been called. They could have horribly taken down those planes before they hit any of those structures. They were not. Why?
Have you tried, Eric, to get camera footage? I mean, the Pentagon is probably the most photographed building on the planet. There has been, except for one frame, or one set of frames, released by the Pentagon a couple of years ago, there's no multiple camera footage of a huge airplane approaching the Pentagon at ground level and smashing into that side.
And whatever video they have, Richard, they are not releasing, and that is strange.
But has Eric tried to get it, or talked to people who tried to get it, or tried to find a paper trail for why we can't get it? In other words, that's the kind of evidence of a conspiracy that you need to document and build.
Well, they've already confiscated a lot. I know Christopher Bolin has talked with the FBI and the Pentagon trying to get information. They won't give it. And when you say there's no conspiracy, I mean, these towers were blown up. You're willing to admit that, right?
No, I'm willing to admit that you have pointed a very interesting finger at a simple set of laws of physics.
So you mean you are saying the towers fell down on their own?
No, I'm saying that you have provided some real evidence that they didn't. But as with any other case, one piece of evidence is never enough.
But it's the same with the government. The government has no evidence for what they're saying either. You could say this about everybody. I mean, I could say you have no evidence that there's structures on the moon.
Ah, but I do.
What is it?
It's on the EnterpriseMission.com website.
Let's go to the phones, as promised. We've got jammed phones. Everybody's waiting to chat, and this is their hour. So let's go east of the Rockies. You're on the line. Where are you calling from?
Hey, this is Dom from Detroit.
Hey, Dom. Go ahead.
Hey, George. Great show.
I'm going to be there tomorrow, as a matter of fact.
Hey, man. Detroit welcomes you.
Big fans here.
Hey, I got I think it's Eric, the guy who believes in the World Trade Center was brought down.
Yes.
Right. I just wanted to make a couple comments, and I'll listen. He needs to get his stuff together and make a nice fruit salad and eat it, because he has no clue what's going on. I think he should buy a TV also, and it might have helped him.
A TV.
All right,
but see, this is more proof to me. It's like, this is all I've been hearing for 4 years. There is nobody that can deny this. This is why it's spreading around the world. Nobody has anything except emotional manipulation.
All right, let me ask another hard question, Eric. Are you familiar with the Lamont-Doherty Observatory?
I've heard of that. Now, the seismic one?
The seismic data north of New York, on the other side of the river, north of where I used to live in New Jersey. Have you tried to get access to the actual seismic records, which are timed and stamped, which would allow you to correlate explosions, ground tremors, S waves, P waves, a whole beautiful data set put into your model that these things were brought down by demolition?
Well, I've got one of them right on page 73 of my book, of the North Tower coming down. I mean, that's the seismic data.
Actual seismic graphs from Lamont Doherty.
That's one of them. That's Lamont Doherty Earth Observatory, Columbia University,
that's
figure 7.1.
Right. By Columbia. Yes.
I mean, I've got it.
Okay.
I mean, you didn't even look at my book. I mean, you're going to criticize me.
I just heard about your book tonight, Eric. I was driving home.
That's right.
I was out quietly having a peaceful evening with Robin, and I hear you on the air, and I'm interested.
And I
call
you.
Get home, turn on the radio, and George says,
but you see, before anyone says I'm wrong, you've got to look at what I'm saying.
You've got to look at these photos.
Look at these photos.
Eric, you got to stop yelling, first of all.
Oh, sorry. Am I too loud?
Nobody can hear you if you're yelling.
Okay, well, what I'm going to say is, this is what I've been hearing for ever since the book's been there. They'll criticize it, but then they say they've never seen it.
Based on the seismic data.
The seismic data is in my book, and that's part of my theory. They brought these buildings down.
No. I'm asking you what your conclusion is based on the seismic evidence.
The seismic evidence shows that the North and South Towers came down within 10 seconds. This is their analysis.
How does it show that?
Their analysis. I've got their words on my video. Their words, not mine. their analysis of their own seismic data. This is the scientist saying, this is they've analyzed the data, not me. I can't really analyze it.
These are geologists at Lamont Doherty who are saying that this is the evidence from their instruments that from the start of the collapse to the finish, it was about 10 seconds, okay?
8 to 10 seconds. Depending on how you want to measure it.
We have that timing from the video.
Right.
All right. So what additional information does the seismic data show us?
The seismic data shows the vibrations. This is what...
What kind of vibrations and when do they start? In other words, Derek, you need to be a little more systematic if you're going to build a decent case.
That's right. And I could say the same about you and your moon theory. We could all do this. I could say this about... This is a generic argument you're using with me. I could say this about everybody.
I'm trying to elicit
Eric, he's trying to help you.
I could say the same about what I'm doing, though. I'm trying to help you understand that you're wrong, that these towers were blown up with explosives, that we did not go to the moon. There is no moon base. There is nothing up there.
Eric, let's go to the calls, gentlemen. Let's go back to the calls. West of the Rockies, you're on the line. Hi there.
Yeah, Jeff in British Columbia. Mr. Hoagland.
Yes, sir.
Just wondering if you could comment on, well, three things. One is, how did the House of Blood film survive the change in temperatures? And how did they get all the colors correct with the infrared and ultraviolet anomalies, basically, because there's no atmosphere? And last but not least, if there's no plane at the Pentagon, which I agree, because there was only a 16-foot hole, obviously there's something going on, and it's part of a very, very big picture, given that with all the cameras around D.C., like you say, there's no footage of any airliner doing anything.
Right.
So I'd just like to see what you have to say.
All right, let me address one and two first. How did the Hasselblad film survive the temperature changes? Is that your question?
Yeah, because it wasn't modified or insulated in any way.
Well, actually it was. It had a white cover, a thermal cover. Remember, in a vacuum, you only have basically radiation to contend with because conduction and convection are non-existent. So the film, according to my friend Charlie, who was the expert, and he had like 30, 40 years of previous experience doing extraordinary filming of very high temperature, you know, regimes like nuclear tests, there was no problem with the film emulsion, with melting, et cetera, all these things that people who are not film experts have claimed.
What about freezing? Because, you know, the guys are trying to keep warm in the suits, and if they have to go through all that process to keep their temperatures stable.
Well, actually, the problem is not freezing on the moon. It was keeping cool because you had sunlight, you had plenty of energy. They had thermal garments that were circulating water, you know, and kind of like long underwear under those spacesuits.
What about the shadow of the lamb? Wouldn't they be colder there?
Well, they wouldn't stay a lot of time in the shadow. And again, you have a large mass, the spacesuit, hundreds of pounds, the astronaut. If you go in and out of shadow relatively quickly for a few minutes, your thermal changes. There's a huge thermal lag. It's why, for instance, on the Earth, because of the oceans, the hottest and the coldest months
or
lag by about a month, the actual dates of summer and winter. But let me get to a more interesting question, which is how did NASA pull this off photographically? If they had Charlie's super film, which I really believe they took, they had extraordinary original records of incredible latitude.
What about the lack of dust or a crater under the limb?
Let me finish,
sure.
Okay? They then brought that film back to Houston, and they made second-generation prints from this extraordinary first-generation film. And in a darkroom scenario with lots of pictures to play with and to choose from, they created a set of beautiful pictures that are all those beautiful PR shots that we've seen in Life magazine and wherever, in terms of the lack of the crater under the rocket engine.
And no dust on the lander feet as well.
Well, because in a vacuum, when you expend that amount of energy in a rocket thrust, it's creating a supersonic wind, and it blew everything away from under the spacecraft coming down, including dust in the footprint.
How'd they make the footprints around the limb, the lander, if there's no dust around?
Because there was residual dust, and you only need a micron or so to make footprints.
That was very, very deep footprints, sir. Extremely deep.
Some places they were deep, other places they were not. I have looked at these close-ups with photographic loops, looking for problems, looking for loopholes, looking for inconsistencies. And as I said earlier in the show, I found areas where NASA faked the imagery, I believe, to hide really cool stuff.
Okay.
And I found other areas where the photographs are consistent with us
landing on the moon.
Do all the shadows make sense to you?
Without going, well, the shadows are a whole, you know, blind, you know, direction, because you're not dealing with a flat surface. You're dealing with a very rolly, lumpy surface without landmarks for size differentiation. In other words, there are no fences. There's no phone poles. You can't tell how close something is or far away because there's no scale, you know, except for the little gnomon that they would put up next to rocks. I can take you through, as we have on the Enterprise website, photograph after photograph that demonstrates that the moon hoaxers do not really have a case. But the moon artifacts people, they have a really interesting case that has never been given appropriate hearing. And I would like you to go and look at the evidence, and then we'll talk later.
And it's possible, Richard, that some of these beauty shots were staged and they threw them in there and grouped them in with the real ones.
Exactly.
Next up, let's go to our wild card line. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
Yeah, Ken here in Burien, Washington.
Yeah, hello, Ken.
Hey, this is a great program tonight, one of the best of all. Now, I've been a photographer since 1936, but I agree totally with Richard on the latitude point, because I've seen those pictures of the light going back up inside there, which... under normal film is not possible. So you're right on there. Now, I got a couple
of
points.
If I hadn't worked with this film myself and had the exquisite pleasure of shooting images for CBS, which they then flew me by helicopter to Boston to Charlie's lab to have developed to bring back so Cronkite could put it on the air that night, and we actually photographed the incredible luminosity of the Saturn V as it lifted off from the pad, and there is a blue color. Normally, all the photos you've seen of the Saturn V liftoff are totally overexposed. This film was able to capture the incredible blue color of that flame. And you know what the blue comes from, George?
Mm-mm.
Nitrogen in the Earth's atmosphere, when you excite it with high enough temperature, emits an incredible blue glow. And we captured the nitrogen glow of the Saturn V engines on this film. So I know this film is as incredible as I've been discussing it. And I also know that's the only way that all these Apollo images could have come back in their perfect form, because they were second and third generation done in a laboratory here on Earth from the first generation that you've never seen.
Okay, very good. Now, I got some other quick comments here. I'll give you as quickly as I can.
Okay, I got a minute to go. Go ahead.
Okay, now, there, as you probably well know, there are a couple of videos out just debunking this very well. But, okay, Kubrick's wife is shown holding a film from her husband, who was the movie producer in England, who had the movie set already there, where there's claims that it was fake there. Now, you'd have to talk with her. She might have some arguments, but let me continue on. The book that comes from England, about 500 and some pages long, has got all kinds of staggering evidence.
It's called Dark Mission.
Yes, okay.
Yeah, that Dark Mission book was produced by a guy named David, I can't remember his last name, but he is a British intelligence agent. He is as phony as the day is long.
And you got to watch that. Stay with us. Richard C. Hoagland, our guest Eric Huffschmidt. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Well, the Friday program will originate live out of the OnStar studios in Detroit. My guest for the first couple hours, of course, will be, yes, their ghost talk investigators. We're going to have some fun with that. Then we'll have some open lines after that for a bit. And then a little surprise for you at the end of the program. You know, this week, Coast would have originated in three cities, Los Angeles, St. Louis, and Detroit. How cool is that? Back in a moment with our guest Richard C. Hoagland and our friend Eric Huffschmidt right now on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie with our friends Richard C. Hoagland and Eric Huffschmidt. Richard C., first of all, I want to thank you for hanging around. I appreciate that. You always seem to be on call whenever we need you.
It's my problem of being up at night listening to you.
Well, you're always writing blogs, too, aren't you?
That's true, yes. We have a very active web blog, and people should go and check it out at Enterprise Mission. You know, George, I wanted to mention that we do have an extensive coverage at Enterprise on this whole moon hoax question, because it's a very serious question. I almost liken it to, you know, if you could have been back in time in Egypt several thousand years ago,
And you have the guys who built the pyramids, right?
I was there.
And then, you know, a couple generations later, you had kids saying, oh, come on, aliens built those. You guys didn't build those. And you have these poor Egyptians trying to explain to a generation that wasn't even, you know, born when the pyramids were built, but we built them. See, you did this and you did this. And I mean, Eric obviously was alive and around and looking when we landed on the moon. But for some reason, he has taken the tack that he's taken. And I just want to commend him and this audience to a set of documents that my esteemed colleague, Steve Troy, who has been a guest of yours on Coast, has prepared with Mike Barra and myself, which is on Enterprise, titled Who Mourns for Apollo? Just go to Enterprise and do a search, or do a search in Google, Who Mourns for Apollo? It comes in three parts, part one, part two, part three. Then there's an article we put together called Another Nail in the Moon Hoax Coffin. And then we have an extensive discussion of the so-called Apollo Sea Rock, called Apollo Sea Rock Revealed, where we actually document the history of one of the photographs, which has a rock with a sea apparently printed on it. And we track back through all the various generations to how that happened, who did it, when they did it, how it got out in the public domain. In other words, when you start to really do heavy investigative reporting on the hoax falls apart. But the mystery of what did Apollo really find does not. And there's several articles and papers on Enterprise devoted in our lunar section to what they really found up there. And it's staggering, George. The evidence is overwhelming. And frankly, you and I should probably do a show with Steve in the not too distant future, going through the old and new evidence, because there's a lot of people in the audience who presumably don't know that we have a good set of data indicating that NASA did go to the moon and they simply hid what they really found.
Well, if you remember what the remote viewer Ingo Swann claims that he saw on the backside of the moon, my late aunt, Richard, as you know, thought the world of him. I mean, she respected him more than anybody on this planet. And then, of course, she passed on. But the fact that she, my aunt, would have so much esteem for Ingo Swann and his remote viewing, and he's saying that he has found bases on the backside of the moon. Now, he claims there were alien bases. I mean, that's still staggering information.
Well, remember Ken Johnston, who was on your air just a few weeks ago, who was a Grumman employee.
Yes.
He eventually went on to become head of the science dissemination for the Lunar Receiving Laboratory. He told a story of looking at Apollo 14 footage with Thornton Page, who we then found out later had CIA connections, and seeing something on the backside of the moon, on the far side, lights in a lunar crater on film taken by the astronauts, Shepard and company, as they went around the moon. Mm-hmm. And the next day when he went to the vault to take out the same film to show to a whole bunch of NASA employees, the film had been mysteriously changed.
You got it.
And so there is a cover-up. I will agree 100% with Eric. There is a cover-up in many areas. I just think that Eric needs to dig deeper for the real cover-up in many areas.
Well, either that or we start demanding NASA and the cover-up. I mean, we both agree they're lying.
Well, we've been demanding of NASA to come clean for a number of years. Would it be nice if you guys joined us in our efforts?
Joined us? Sure, let's demand it. Let's demand it. Let's find out if they faked it or there's colonies up there. I mean,
we have a website, Eric, which has, as of this month, August alone, over 200,000 visitors. That's not hits. 200,000 visitors. We have some leverage here. What I'm trying to do is to organize them in a politically effective campaign to demand our rights under the Constitution, under the First Amendment, for access to data we all paid for. And I frankly think we need data in a range of areas, for me, starting with what did we really find on the moon.
But 200,000 visitors, 190,000 of that was Bad Boy from Nighthawk Zone all by himself. Let's go to our wild card line. You're on the air. Welcome to the show. Hi there.
Hey, George. How you doing?
Good.
You have me fired up tonight.
How come? What did we do to you?
Oh, man. All right, first of all, my name is Paul, and I'm from Washington State.
Okay. Go ahead.
And I'm just retired out of the United States Army.
Well, right. Congratulations, and thank you for your service, Bob.
All right. First of all, I'm an 18 Bravo Special Forces Sergeant, all right? And on September 11th, 9/11, I was going into the Pentagon for what they call flight ops, physical, where they put air in your eye to see how it, for the atmosphere changes.
Right.
And seven of us were standing out there when that 747 hit that building. Not a drone, not a biplane, a 747 slammed in the side of that building and took two of my friends' lives. All right? I am not an operative. No one's paid me off. Eric needs to understand, and I looked at his website, that he's going at it the wrong way. First of all, the FBI is not the one that confiscated all that material and all the film. He's thinking, he's blaming things on the CIA and the FBI. They don't run anything in this country when it comes to intel. He needs to break it down to the NSA and the NSC. They are the ones that do it. Now, I personally saw that plane slam inside that wall. I seen a full 747 hit that wall and destroy into nothing. Now, they can say whatever they want. After this incident happens, everybody gets wound up. You get a debrief. You sign possible denial forms. You're not allowed to talk to anybody unless it's military personnel or military intelligence. That's why a lot of this hasn't been put out. And if he thinks that the CIA is doing 90%, the CIA is 95% analyst. If anything goes to them, it goes to the NSA. And the NSA, I'm not saying that there is not conspiracies in this world, but the NSA is the one that runs everything. Right behind the NSC, what is the National Security Council.
All right. Eric, you want to react to any of that?
Well, yeah, it's quite possible. I know Kay Griggs has the same thing. The CIA is sort of like bogus and throwing us off course. And she thinks it's more military intelligence, Army, the Navy intelligence, that does a lot of this stuff. So I guess you could say the guy's right. You know, it may not be the CIA. It could be these other agencies. But what difference does it make? They're lying, whether it's the CIA, the FBI. See, it's like trying to figure out who's doing the lying. I don't know who's doing the lying. I don't know who's in it. All I can do is say they're lying. And, you know, it's like the same thing. We're all agreeing with this. We're all agreeing they're lying. They're confiscating stuff. It's a question of why are they lying? Who is doing the lying? We're all agreeing they're lying.
Well, Eric, you need to break it down to who has the power in the intelligence agency, and it comes straight from the NSC, straight to the NSA.
Well, maybe they're in it, but see, the point is, it's not what they're telling us. They're lying. We're all agreeing to that. This is what we have to start asking ourselves. Do we want to continue with this? Do we want to just continue with all these lies? I mean, even if Hoagland is correct, let's assume he's correct, and there are bases. Why don't they tell us that? Do we want to continue this kind of life? You got to put yourself in a position. To me, one of the saddest things is these veterans laying in their beds because they're paralyzed, staring at the ceiling hour after hour, day after day, thinking, I sacrificed my life for this, for these lies. I'm laying here in this bed for years because of this. I mean, think about this. Do we want to continue this nonsense?
I agree with you when you're coming off of that. But a veteran, everyone who I've served with, being in Afghanistan, Desert One, and other conflicts, and I have done things that the United States will never know what I have done just because of the nature of my background. You need to understand that every one of us out there, we love our job, and that's why we do it. Now, when you join, you sign that dotted line, and you know you may be giving your life for this country.
But they're not giving it for the country. They're giving it to these goofballs, these criminals, these perverts.
George, if I may jump in here.
Jump in, Richard.
First of all, am I to understand that you actually were an eyewitness to the plane that hit the Pentagon?
Yes, there were seven of us standing there coming off. We were coming into the medical center, which is on the third subfloor, for our physicals. And seven of us came off the commuter bus, which is a DOD bus. And as soon as this all happened, it was all chaos. Everyone who was there got briefed up. We got debriefed. They got people running around who are supposed to be warrant officers. They're not. They belong to some agency. And the bottom line is this. The people in the United States need to understand something. The CIA is great for analysts. They have some of the best pictures, SATCOM, in the world. But everything's ran through two agencies.
Okay, the question I asked is, did you physically see the aircraft yourself? Were you outside?
Yes.
Well, but you said it was a 747. It was a 757.
That was my first point, yes.
Yeah, that's important.
I apologize on that. It was a big, to me, what looks like a 747.
Okay.
All right,
why aren't we seeing any video footage?
Because as soon as that happens, you have to understand how an investigation takes place. Everything gets shut down. People are ordered to go out and get everything.
Or bodies. And I can't believe they all incinerated.
Well, what about the 13 undefined bodies that were in that were in the Pentagon. All they have is ashes, closed caskets.
Yeah, but well, here's another thing. With a wingspan on a 757, all we saw in the initial photographs was a hole 16 feet wide, that something penetrating obviously went through, but there
were
no...
And where are the engines? The engines in every crash we've ever seen.
That should have been on the outside of the building.
Survive. You cannot vaporize an airplane at those speeds, even hitting a concrete wall.
Well, you guys sound like me. What's going on? It's reversed itself.
No. Nobody has said you're wrong, Eric. We're just saying, where's the evidence?
Hard evidence, Eric. Evidence.
But that's what I'm saying. There's no evidence of the plane.
No,
you guys are agreeing.
You've got to make your case on evidence.
Here's the most compelling piece of evidence with regards to the Pentagon crash. There is, to this day, a tremendous amount of depleted uranium readings, quite frankly, radiation readings outside of the Pentagon building.
Really?
That was taken not only then, Richard, but now. That is thousands of times higher than what would normally
get.
Where
is that data?
That data is now obtainable. I'll get you the name of the person if you want to talk to her.
I definitely need to, yes.
That is such an anomaly.
That implies such interesting things about concrete penetration and shape charges and missiles?
Yes.
That kind of stuff?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And we will do that. But in terms of the call, I've got to go to another call, Paul, but very quickly again, I'm sure you folks saw something. No doubt about that. But you can't say that it was a plane with people aboard, can you?
No, I didn't see any people, no.
Okay.
But I can't.
Paul, let me leave you with one thought. I have some very good intel sources who give me information about a range of things. And one of them, I got to make a bumper sticker out of this because I know people need to see this. He tells me, he said, inside there's a saying, the lie is different at every level.
Isn't that the truth?
Okay.
Thanks.
Thank you, Paul. Appreciate you being part of the program. A few more minutes to go. Final calls. Let's go to our international line. You're on the air. Hi there. Hello.
Hello.
Yeah, where are you calling from, sir? Go ahead.
This is Richard, Winnipeg.
Okay, Richard, take it away.
How you doing? It's Richard from Winnipeg. I'd like to make a comment on the Pentagon. There's a site out there called In Plain Sight, PlaneSite.
Yes, I've seen it.
It's got a lot of pictures, a lot of information. And
you've had the producers on the show, right, George?
Yes, sure. David Von Kleiss and Joyce Riley.
And, I mean, it shows that there's a lot of damage there, but there's nothing showing that there's a plane. I mean, there's a lot of construction stuff still standing there. There's witnesses saying that they heard something, but
the lawn in front of the Pentagon is untouched. You could
exactly.
have gone and had a picnic on it before that one wing collapsed.
And exactly. I'd like to see the video that has been confiscated by the FBI that would have shown a plane hitting the Pentagon.
Well, there was a gas station video across the
yes.
street.
They will not release that.
See, this is the question I wanted Paul to try to give us an answer on. If this is such a critical case for the world, remember when Adlai Stevenson went in front of the UN and he showed the photos of the missiles in Cuba and gave ourselves a solid world backing for taking some action against Castro, all right?
Mm-hmm.
Why have we not had that case with this video documentation of the most photographed building in the world showing this awful thing happening frame by frame by frame? What is wrong with this picture?
Yeah, that's what I say. Like, when you look at all the pictures in the site, at no...
Hello?
Did we lose Eric?
No, I'm here. I think the caller just dropped off.
No, I'm still there.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
Well, no, what I'm saying is, if you look at any of the pictures, there's no damage. Like, if a plane crashes, you have to have damage. I mean, it's just a big piece of equipment that's got to be broken up, and there's nothing. It looks like it's just
well, the dogs, the dogs that went in to search for the bodies couldn't even find a scent of a human either. There's no sign of people or luggage or anything.
Exactly. So to me, there's no way a plane can fly into a building and not leave something behind.
I'll get
well,
you.
There was something. There was like one little engine. There were little teeny scraps. It's just that it wasn't a big scrap.
I've seen little tiny fragments sitting like they were posed on that lawn.
Well, there's also an engine, one little engine part outside.
Yeah, but it's not a 757 Pratt & Whitney.
That could have been an engine of a missile, right?
Or a exactly. Global Hawk is about the right size of it.
George, that depleted uranium thing is very important to follow up on.
Well, you can see,
I'll get you some info on that.
There's a video that on my website that shows not only the cleanup, but it talks about this. There, you look at the cleanup crews. They're wearing yellow boots and they're scrubbing each other's shoes after they walk through the area. This is a decontamination process. This is not just shoe shining.
Okay, no, that's interesting evidence. See, Eric, my point with you is that you're taking a scattergun technique approach when you need, you know, a 30-30 or a laser. You need to be very focused because most people are predisposed not to want to believe in the C word. And to document that we are prey to conspiracies to keep the truth on many events from us, you must document, 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 document.
Well, I've got it. That's what the book and the video for and my website. I mean, we even go into the depleted uranium. Christopher Bolin wrote an article about that level, that woman who said she measured it. He's got an article, but it's been out there for a long time. And I think now there's another one that someone else wrote, but it's there. And if you look at the World Trade Center, it's even possible they used uranium on that one or some sort of incinerator. You know,
well, all I know is we've got readings near the Pentagon, and they're massive. And to me, that sounds like depleted uranium, which is a coating that they use in some of these missiles to penetrate
absolutely
buildings and armor.
It's hard site penetration technology.
Yep, absolutely. Richard C., we are out of time. What's new on the website?
EnterpriseMission.com, the captain's blog. We're updating our deep impact story. We're following return to flight. And obviously, we're preparing some major surprises for coast to coast.
Very good. Thanks, Richard. Appreciate you.
Thanks, George. Eric,
battling
it's a pleasure.
What?
All right. And Eric, thank you. We've said sayonara to Richard and also to yourself. Thanks for being on the program.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. That's Eric Hufschmidt. Now, I will be live in Detroit on our Friday into Saturday show. We're going to be talking some ghosts. We're going to take phone calls. I got a little surprise at the end of the program for you. And then I move back on to St. Louis before heading on to Los Angeles, where Stan Dale says there will be a major earthquake one day, and I may be right there at the right time for that one. For Dan Galati, Steve Carr, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Laudasur, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie. Somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM, I'll see you on our next edition live from Detroit. Until then, be safe, everyone.